Thank you so much for coming out. This is Dev Intersection. Did you have a good time today? Lots of workshop folks? Awesome. And we, for the first time ever, are being live streamed, so the Channel 9 folks and various Microsoft groups also seeing this live, and we'll be streaming this room all week, so there will be lots out in the world as well. My name is Richard Campbell. I'm one of the organizers here. We've been doing this show for 3 years now. Really excited to see so many folks out, so thank you for coming. I hope you're having a good time so far today. It's been 2 days of workshops. We can't seem to fit them all in. How many folks took a workshop? Oh, wow, lots and lots of hands. That's awesome. So I hope they were great. Hope they had a good time doing them. And we have a big lineup coming up for you now. Thanks so much for coming out this evening. A few housekeeping items, all the usual stuff for a conference. It's really important that you wear your badge. That's how we know you're supposed to be here. There are lots of events going on in Vegas these days, so it's important that we have you in the right place and people aren't supposed to be there, aren't there, so please wear your badge. We have lots of different ways for you to let us know how we're doing. So there's forms you can fill in where we're going to do drawings for the cruise on Wednesday, as well as Eventboard, the app, that has all the up-to-date stuff about our show and also a way for you to let us know how each session is, so we can make sure we've got the right people and the right sessions for you. Without any more ado, you will see me every day opening up the show, so I'll be around with chances to talk to you as well. I'd like to introduce my friend and Corporate Vice President at Microsoft for DX, Stephen Guggenheimer.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
How are you?
You bet.
Mike, is this Mike live? You guys hear me okay? All right. Well, thank you. Well, I got to find my clicker. Thank you for making time tonight on a Monday night. Cardinals-Ravens, not the best game in the world, so it's worthwhile. We'll get there for second half. First off, just thanks for making the time tonight. Thanks for coming to the conference for the 2 days of the workshops. I'm going to start high level. I'm the guy who's going to do the framing. You've got 3-plus days of deep dives into all different areas. We've got some great speakers coming in. Hanselman's here. Guthrie's coming. Xander's coming. I saw Thoreau and Mary Jo are coming. So lots of deep dive. What I wanted to do was sort of give you a perspective from all the things we're seeing in the industry, and not just our industry, but other industries around the work that we collectively do. And then take it down a level into the core areas you're going to see over the course of the week on the cloud side, on the SaaS side, on the devices side. Have a little fun. I was able to steal some hardware, so I have one of the Surface Books to show off at the end, and I've got one of the new phones as well. So we'll do some demos as we go along and make it lively. I did want to make sure it was Monday night. We didn't take ourselves too seriously. So I always like to start with a video that I think aligns with the conference, the timing. It's Monday night. It's football season. We're going to talk a little bit about sports. So let's start off on the right foot.
Wish it didn't come to this.
Marshawn Lynch, you're in detention. And let me warn you, it's no study hall. Don't yakety-yak me, okay? You're player two and you're receiving.
Shucks. I'm up 14.
I know.
Fumble on the kickoff return?
I'm in detention, so I'm gonna take it easy.
Yeah, you just got my heart murmured.
Well, you do not want these problems. Speed burst. Hit stick them.
You're supposed to be in detention. I feel like I'm in detention.
There's a notification. You just scored.
I did?
Yeah. I got you on my fantasy team on Xbox One. That's 6 points.
Come on, wait. Is them highlights of me?
Yeah.
That guy there is pretty good.
Yeah, he's pretty good. Where did he come from?
His name is Jericho.
Fantasy, highlights, next-gen stats, the NFL on Xbox One.
Hey! Hands off, buddy.
All right, that's our start. I promise we won't take ourselves too seriously. And Marshawn is a lot of fun when you get him out of the press area and into the rest of the world. So I thought I'd start off at a high level. I get the opportunity to meet with a lot of companies, talk to a lot of developers, and I have this theme in my head today that we're sort of at the crossroads, or since we're at this show, we're at the intersection of transformation and disruption. When I spend time with sort of larger organizations, established businesses, they always talk about they're transforming, they're in the middle of transformation, they need help with transformation, you know, everything's changing. And then there's a whole bunch of startups out there and companies that are pretty new that are busy trying to disrupt everybody that's out there. They're after the existing ISVs, they're after the existing industries, so it truly is a crossroads. And I like to bring the two together. Turns out the folks that are transforming, They like the disruptors because they bring new technology and new ideas in. And it turns out the disruptors, they like the scale of the transformation, you know, the companies and industries that are transforming, and it turns out that's where the money often is. So when you can bring the two groups together, in particular by industry, it's a lot of fun. And on Wednesday this week, I'm going to be in New York speaking at a sports conference. And so I brought along some of the content from that around that industry in terms of transformation and disruption. Now, I tend to step back and say, you know, how did we get here? And we're at an interesting point in time because two decades ago when I started, we mostly cared about processor speed. 286 to 386, 386 to 486, 486 to Pentium. Let's add a GPU over time. What can we do if we have more processor speed? That was the early days. And at this point, look, that's not an issue. We got more processor power than we know what to do with it, but we got plenty. And across all different types of devices. So that sort of becomes not the conversation. Then the next conversation became storage. 5 1/4 inch disks, 3 1/2 inch disks. Some of you will remember the iOmega drives, thumb drives. Then we get into cloud storage, and we go from Tera into Peta and Zeta, et cetera. We're pretty good on storage. And then you get into bandwidth. We went from mobile modems to cable modems, DSL, 2G, 3G, 4G, LTE, et cetera. That one's not done everywhere, but we're in pretty good shape in a lot of countries. So now what happens is we have an ever-growing number of devices that are, you know, highly capable, lots of processing, that are connected, and there's lots of storage in the background. What happens then, instead of having a device-by-device conversation, we end up in complete disruption of industry conversations. And I thought Jeff Immelt said it sort of very well, which was, we believe that every industrial company will become a software company. Sort of an interesting statement given the fact that about 3 months after he said that, he basically said, I'm getting in the software business and I think it can be a $15 billion business. So he's putting his sort of money where his mouth is, but everywhere we go, the software side and honestly developers are the front end of the conversation today. And so that makes you guys incredibly valuable, incredibly important, and yet there's a lot going on. So our goal here is to at least let you know what we're working on and be as helpful as we can be overall in that conversation. Now, in terms of transformation and disruption, we see it everywhere. You see it in education. Travel's kind of fun. You might not think of Uber as disruptive travel, but certainly hit the cab industry pretty hard. Airbnb, I mean, every part of that industry. Finance, we know the Sages of the world and the Intuits of the world and sort of in the small business, but Xero coming out of New Zealand, growing fast, doing big work, so we see startups there. Healthcare, you know, you've got all the insurance companies, then you have your GE Healthcare and your Epic and your Epicor, and they're out there, you know, big players. And then you have Fitbit sort of coming up in the ranks. So everywhere you look, you've got this mixture between the startups and the existing companies that are transforming. I like to bring this to life through different industries. I've told this story a couple times, so I'll do the short version tonight and then we'll move over to sports. But it turns out dairy farming, it might not be the first thing you think about when you think of all this technology and sort of processors and storage and bandwidth, but it's a pretty good one. Turns out in Japan a couple years ago, they put a pedometer on a cow. Actually, they put a pedometer on a whole herd of cows, and they started tracking the cows. And it turns out, based on how much a cow is walking or not walking and when they're walking and a whole bunch of other signs of the pedometer from the cow, turns out you can tell when a female cow is in estrus. And from that, turns out you can make more cows. So you can become a more efficient cow producer based on a pedometer on a cow. Well, that was a pretty good start. It also turns out, if you spend some energy on it, you can tell when your cows are healthy or sick. And when they're sort of, you know, optimized, if you have an optimized cow or not. Well, people have taken that science, turned it into a business. Can you guess which country produces the most milk per cow on the planet? You might think Wisconsin, Netherlands. Turns out it's Israel. Might not be the first thing you think about. But they actually have a company there called Healthy Cow 24. I have the video, you can go look it up, it's lots of fun. And it's basically, you put your pedometers on your cow, you track your herd, and you get a more healthy herd. Then they took the next step, which is there's another company called Afamilk, which tests the milk as it comes out through the production line, and instead of putting it all in a vat and separating it afterwards, they separate it real time between the coagulated milk used for cheese and the other milk used for drinking, so they get more efficient there. Then they have a sort of cloud collective of all the dairy farmers in Israel, and they work together on sharing information, they use the veterinarians, all work together, and so they've created the sort of best cow ecosystem with a set of disruptive startups on the planet for milk production. So if you haven't looked that one up, go look up The Connected Cow. There's a couple stories out there. That one, given it's Monday night and there's Monday night football, I thought I'd transition from The Connected Cow to The Connected Zebra. And you'd say, okay, what are we going to do with a connected zebra? We're going to run a more efficient zoo. Actually, no, it turns out Zebra is the name of a company that puts trackers on athletes. And they've used it in the NFL for tracking the players. You haven't seen too much of it yet, but it's coming. And so they put them in the shoulder pads, they put them on the players. Let me run a video that shows you a little bit of what they're working on, and you can see how sort of disruptive new technology is coming into sports.
The NFL's next-gen stats platform is changing the game, giving broadcasters access to real-time location data, speed, and acceleration for every player, every moment, and on every square inch of the field.
A twisting, diving catch, touchdown!
In more than 120 regular season games, Zebra's on-field player tracking and motion work system has delivered cutting-edge data. Sensors throughout the stadium track tags placed on players' shoulder pads, charting individual movements down to the inch.
The next-gen stats have been credited with 968 yards of running tonight total.
During the course of a game, broadcasters now have instant access to how much distance a player covers and the speed on a particular play.
A big man can run 19 miles an hour.
Along with receiver routes and acceleration.
I mean, look at that speed.
The innovative technology will be in full display in this year's Pro Bowl, making it the most technologically advanced football game in history. In the NFL, the future is now. Brought to you by Zebra Technologies, official on-field player tracking provider of the NFL.
So kind of fun stuff, and that's just sort of the very tip of the iceberg. The interesting thing is, as fans, lots of fun. I can tell you, as athletes, they're not so sure getting tracked all the time. There's been lots of conversation. The rugby players are starting to use this in the World Cup this year in terms of how well you're training, how hard you're hitting. It's interesting when you mix the science on the business side. Now, since we're talking football, let's be very international in our conversation. Let's go Europe here, Real Madrid. Real Madrid, this is more of a full conversation. You know, as a franchise, I think they're $3 billion+, but they run in these 90-minute increments. They have about 400 million fans worldwide, about 125 million that are contactable. They know who they are. So given you put 100,000 in a stadium, what do you do with the other, 399 million blah, blah, blah fans that aren't at the stadium? How do you use the information? How do you reach them? Well, we started to work with them on the devices, on the cloud, on the whole business side of it to sort of look at the information. And first thing that was done, which was kind of fun, is this is just a measure of Twitter traffic around the globe over a period of time. And it turns out, obviously, you get Spain, but they're very global as a franchise. And as they analyze the data and you look at it over time, the number two country in terms of Twitter feedback or tweets is Indonesia. Number two. And the number three language is the national language of Indonesia, is the number three language. So all of a sudden, you can get a better sense for where your fan base is just by analyzing the Twitter traffic. One signal. Now, from the fan experience, if you go the other directions, which is how do we deliver an interesting experience for the fan base, well, of course, first thing you do is you build a mobile app, you use the cloud, you can do lots of things with that. You can put players out there to engage with, sell merchandise, give scores, give stats, you can do lots of fun things, and that's pretty standard. The next level is sort of with the game itself, doing the second screen experience. So whether I'm in the stadium or whether I'm at home, use a phone or a tablet or pick the device of choice, and pick up different camera angles. And later this week, I'm not going to do it here, but I'm going to show off NASCAR is doing the same thing. With NASCAR, you'll be able to look inside of the car with their new application and get different angles from different cars, different feeds. So all of a sudden, all the camera angles all of these franchises and sports leagues have can be used to increase or improve that fan experience. You can also do stuff for the 100,000 or so that get in stadium. You can do things there. So for example, you can take the social side of it. You can figure out where your friends are at. A little Bluetooth LE, a little connectivity in the stadium. You can do other things like, say, where are the purchasing stands or places you want to go to buy things. At Seahawks Stadium already, from the application for the Seahawks, you can order food or beer at your seat and they will bring it to you. Highly dangerous, highly addictive. But it's out there today. There's a company called OpenField that's starting to keep track of people from when they purchase the ticket through the train ride to the stadium, through going through the ticket entry in the stadium itself to try and increase both the fan experience and, of course, like the advertising model, trying to sell more things too. So the business angle is coming into this conversation from all of the data that goes around with it. Of course, when you're in the stadium, you can also watch video, watch the replay, watch the game in parallel, watch different camera angles, same things you can do at home. So whether it's the broad aspect of the fan base, in the stadium, on the go, the data for the business, this is an industry, sort of like the dairy industry, undergoing large transformation. And there are a number of startups that are fueling it, and there's a ton of work on the development side. There isn't a sports league or franchise that isn't undergoing massive change. Like all the things that those guys have done for the last 20 years, it's a redo. And we see that in almost every industry. Sports actually is in some ways further behind and further ahead than others. They have more sensors, but they don't necessarily know what to do, you know, haven't used the data. So that's the starting point. We live in this world, everything is under transformation, there's a large number of disruptors, and then for us, look, we're still plumbers, we're a platform company. So we wanna provide you with as much of the platform capability as is both interesting and useful for whatever role you play in that. And so I was gonna sort of go through the three top areas tonight, do a little on tools, you'll see more over the course of the week. I'll start on the cloud side with Azure. And let me move that forward. Now, Scott Guthrie's coming tomorrow morning, and he's got an hour and 15 minutes, so he'll do the left to right. I thought I'd start at a very high level, and then we'll pick two specific areas. He'll talk about hyperscale, what it means to sort of build a data center, run a data center, what a data center means to us, what that means globally. The notion of enterprise proven, which means being ready for large organizations to take advantage of it. And then that notion of hybrid. When we build Azure, we build it for both on-premises and in the cloud. Most people that are born in the cloud never have that client-server history. They don't know how to do that transition or that transformation. So he'll spend time on that. I won't go into it in detail here. The thing I'll do is I'll pick up from the sports conversation, which is that collecting data. I think the most interesting part of the conversation on Azure right now is actually the data side. We've done a lot of announcements around security in the cloud, the data lake service, a whole bunch of other pieces on the machine learning side. We've made acquisitions. This is the part that's growing sort of at an incredible rate. I get to have all these conversations with startups who are like, oh yeah, I'm gonna have data as a platform. Yeah, data is really interesting if you know what to do with it, if you can do something with it. And it's actually not that easy. And so we're spending time on both the ability to sort of collect data from an IoT stream, from whatever feeds you have, make that available, and then put the analytics against it. And once you start to put the machine learning at it, on it and put the visual front end to it, you can then go back and look at any industry. So I'll take sports. You can change the experience for the fans. You can change the competitive experience. I'll use a Red Bull air racing example around that, using machine learning to pick the track. Or the track that the pilot takes and how they fly, and that's something where literally less than a second makes a difference. And then for the business itself. And so if we go back to Real Madrid, 125 million users that they have data and information on. Now, it's hard to do much with it unless you can put a visual front end to it. So I'm gonna sort of run a video in the background and we'll sort of talk through it, and then we'll do this live, not with the Real Madrid data. But first we can just get access using Power BI to the fans. So that's an easy start. Now using natural language query, we can do it by country. So let's just break this up for country. And we'll see it layout. So now you can see where all your fans are. You can turn that into a bar chart if you want. We can turn it into a pie chart if we want. So you can go that way. Then you can go back and start to drill in even deeper. So you could pick a specific area. So instead of going by country, let's pick a specific country. So start at the top. And then, so I think they went to France, January. So we got a month for France. You can split it up between men and women. So how many, what do they do by males, et cetera. So you can really dive into the data. This is a very crude representation, but this is the starting point of the Power BI. Now, we just released a new client. This is crude because it's early work. The new Power BI client, very rich, lots of visual representation for the data. And so what I thought I'd do is I was gonna ask Richard to come up, and Richard's gonna do two things. Since Scott's gonna show off Azure tomorrow, one of the things we've been working on is a sandboxed access to Azure, so you don't have to put in a credit card. It's super easy to get started. So if you wanna see the way to get onto Azure very easily, Richard will show that. Hello, Richard. And then show you some of the new visualization tools in Power BI that just released literally, I think it was this week. So with that, I'm gonna hand off. Richard, how are you?
Good.
Can we go to the demo machine, please?
I wanna talk a little bit about the developer story around Power BI. You know, Power BI is an end-user tool. It's really meant to allow anyone to be able to explore data. From a developer standpoint, there's a lot that you can do to make that experience better. In order to kind of start that off, usually you're going to want a place to be able to test things out and be able to maybe do some deployments for some of that testing. And so where I'm going to actually start off here today is actually in a new area, and that's the Azure App Service. We have a lot of interest in you being able to go kick the tires and try out Azure. And we've heard really loudly from developers that, hey, I went to sign up and it requires a credit card and a subscription and all these things. We want to make that really, really easy for developers. And so with the Azure App Service, I can simply go in, select one of the popular types of Azure platform that I might want to test around with, and I basically get that for free for an hour to play around with. So if I were to go down here at the bottom of this screen, I can see that I can pick from some of the, again, popular areas within Azure, like websites and mobile services, API apps, logic apps, and I can simply select one of these without ever having to provide any sort of like subscription or sign-up process. I can go and select a platform. Maybe I want to go with Node.js or an empty website. And once I say create, this is actually going to go provision a website for me in Azure for an hour. I can get the publishing profile. I can go publish from GitHub. I can do all those things that I might want to do. And you can see that here. I actually have the website URL. I can go and publish a site that I have put together. So from there, I might put together some really cool things. And if I want to be able to really develop some great things in Power BI, we're starting to introduce a lot of those for developers. So one is we're starting to introduce a set of APIs so that you can actually inject data into Power BI. So we have APIs for you to create data sets, to be able to put data into it, and do a lot of powerful things there. Another thing that we're doing that's going to make Power BI very powerful for developers is give you the ability to build your own custom visualizations. So in fact, we've started to introduce these custom visualizations for Power BI. We have a whole number of those out on GitHub that you can pull down and look how they're built. And I thought I'd give you an example of what that might look like. So here I am inside of Power BI where I'm actually creating a dashboard. And I'm using some of the default visualizations that are there for me. But with just a few clicks, I can really transform this using the power of what developers can do. So for instance, at the bottom left of the screen, what you're looking at is some data over time. Well, looking at that in a bar chart, it's really messy. It looks like a whole bunch of crazy activity is going on. And there's probably a better visual for me to look at this in. So I'm going to simply go over here, and I have a chart that actually then converts this to something that's actually a calendar. So I've actually put a rich data view that is date specific on here. And I can continue with this maybe in this top one instead of a bar chart. I might go with something like a radial. Again, these are all custom visuals that I went out and got off GitHub. In this final one here, maybe I want to do something fun with like bubbles. Now, just because I'm using custom visualizations here in this Power BI dashboard doesn't mean it changes the experience of Power BI. So I can still click on anything in here, and even my custom visuals are going to filter down based upon what I select. I don't have to do any sort of special connections. The data is connected, and therefore the visualizations are connected. So the final thing for developers that we're hearing really loudly is, well, these visualizations are fantastic, but I don't want to send my users to a Power BI website or one of the native applications. I want to be able to embed those great visuals in my own applications. And we're going to start introducing that this week. So there's going to be some great things announced at SQL Pass, but I want to show you a quick glimpse into what that might look like. So what I'm going to do is jump out here to PowerPoint. And I'm going to show you, we actually gave one of our MVPs an early glimpse into some of the APIs for doing embedding. And within just a couple of days, they built a really fantastic integration that I'm going to show you here. So I'm going to simply go out here to add-ins. What they built was a Power BI add-in for PowerPoint. So I'm going to go and insert this into my page here, this little slide. Now, a PowerPoint add-in, the modern add-ins, are actually just a web page. So what you're looking at here is just a web page. But I have the ability of simply going out here and selecting one of the data sets that I have out in Power BI. And I can simply go and insert one of these visuals into this PowerPoint presentation. So replace PowerPoint with your own custom application. That's what we're looking to enable developers with Power BI.
Excellent. Thank you, Richard. Yep. Big hand for Richard. He'll be back a little bit later. Find my clicker. So that was sort of quick on Azure and Power BI. Again, you guys have an hour and 15 minutes to kick off the day bright and early tomorrow. So we'll deep dive. I wanted to go to the second part of the conversation, which is really on the SaaS side. If we think about sort of platforms, on the cloud side, there's Azure, and Azure sort of has the not just the cloud component with IaaS and PaaS, but there's all the data side that's coming, and I think that's the big part of that conversation. On the SaaS side, it's been quite a journey with Office. Office has traditionally been an application that also is a platform. It ends up being a front end for line of business applications. In particular, between SharePoint and Exchange and some of the client server side of this, if you're sort of the small dental office, they'll use the calendar for scheduling. If you want to use the Excel and Word for remittances, SharePoint for sharing, there's obviously a whole industry and business around Office as the front end for line of business applications. I was talking with a Fortune 50 CIO, and her feedback was, look, Office is my universal language. There's over a billion users of Office worldwide. For her as a company, it's sort of the core line of business application she wants to connect everything else into, because it's what her users know. So the thing we've been on the journey for then is to take the traditional client server side, which had a good platform, a good set of APIs, and then bring that forward with Office 365. And honestly, that's taken some time. As we've gotten to the release of 2016, which was just a couple weeks ago now, I think we've come the right distance on the Office 365 APIs to start turning it into a real platform. Obviously, Office does a lot for teamwork. It's built for Windows 10, and it, you know, it works the way people need. But for us, it's about sort of the developer platform side. A year ago, if we had been here and had this conversation, the APIs and the platform itself wasn't ready for you or for sort of working broadly. Since then, I think there's two sides now. We've had the ability with Office 2016 to extend it with add-ins. So if you want to sort of take Sage and use it in Excel, it works very seamlessly. There's a whole sort of new set of APIs for that that work very well. And you see both startups in there, you know, that we're working with as well as traditional folks. And then on the other side, it's connecting with the O365 APIs. We spent a lot of time cleaning them up. You see both folks like DocuSign. You'd expect it's very seamless to be sitting in Outlook now and sign a document and stay in the experience. Do as a startup for calendaring. That pink thing is somebody called PickHitMe. They basically do crowdsourcing for photos that you can use in PowerPoint, and it flows in nicely. The other side of that is getting information out of Office. So if we think about the notion of a graph, today we talk a lot about social graphs. So Facebook is a social graph. I can take people, I can take pictures, I can take activities, we can connect them all together, and you have a very rich social graph. And it turns out Office sort of is the business graph. I've got documents, I've got people, I've got calendar items, I've got a whole bunch of rich information, and instead of having a linear flow app by app, we can put people in the center of that and then use that information to essentially make a much richer experience. We've built one of those. It's called Delve. And so Delve is our front end for the Office graph as a starting point. But it's also now a developer platform. So I was going to have Richard come back up and show that off, because I think the next phase of this is not just Office applications, but Office as a platform for developers, and the graph is a key part of that. With that, I'm going to hand back to you. Let's see if the machine is still alive. Excellent.
So far, so good.
Yeah, we're off to a good start.
Yeah, so, you know, it's interesting, as we started to get more and more adopters of Office 365, we did start to amass this huge amount of data, and we noticed that there were some really intelligent things we could start pulling out of it. We could start seeing how different people were collaborating with each other and what types of content they were collaborating on. And so we did build this graph, and the first kind of way we exposed that graph was through Delve. And so if I go to Delve here, I'll just jump over, and I'm going to have to look up there because it's not. So this is my Delve, and what you're seeing is all content that's been curated out of the Office graph. So the Office graph is smart enough to know the types of people I'm working with, regardless of org structure, knows who I work with, it knows the type of interests I have, and so this is what Delve thinks is relevant to me today. Now, as soon as we released this, we had a number of developers that said, hey, I want to tap into that too. I want to be able to go and get all the great machine learning things that you guys are doing around how people collaborate. And so we started to introduce a set of APIs for that. So I'm going to jump out here, and I have another tab where it's just kind of an API explorer where I can go play around with some of our endpoints. And what I'm going to do is go out to me/trending-around. And what this is actually a query that I can go execute against the Office graph. And so what you're going to see is this is going to come back with some JSON data, But if we were to look at the details, this is the same data that you saw in Delve. And so as developers, you can take this raw data and really do anything that you want with it. And so the example I'm gonna show you here, this is a really simple little SharePoint add-in that I threw together. And I just decided, let me take the Delve data and let's put a different type of visualization on top of it. So I'll go ahead and click into this Office Graph Explorer. And what this is gonna do, it's gonna give me more of a visual depiction of all those connections that are going on within the Office Graph. And it's kind of busy here, and I can kind of, it's kind of cool HTML5 type of thing. But what's neat is I can actually start exploring this. So if I wanted to go and maybe look at a document, if I click on it, it'll actually allow me to go and open the document. Or if I wanted to go explore maybe Sonia here, I can go move Sonia into the center and see the content that relates to her. So this is being able to go and query the Office Graph. Well, we also had developers that said, you already have a cool user interface in Delve. Can I not just go and customize the Delve experience? Well, we're gonna allow you to do that as well. So I'm gonna show you one, this is kind of a very early glimpse into what we're hoping to enable for developers. But this is a kind of a beta version of Delve. And if I were to scroll down here, it looks very similar to the first one I brought up. But I'm gonna zoom into this one guy right here. And if you notice, this card has actually been curated out of Salesforce. So Salesforce is one of those partners we're working closely with to be able to actually inject some signals into the Office Graph to put their own activity in so that we can surface it through the native experience inside of Delve. So this is the types of things we're looking to enable with the Office 365 APIs and the Office Graph.
Thank you, Richard. Give him a hand. Came all the way from Seattle for that. Actually, I think he's got a couple other sessions. I would note that I have the term Microsoft graph here, because Office is only one part of the family, and over time, there are more places where information can come into the graph. I should also highlight, IT still controls this. It's a really good way to see how well your security is set up in terms of information. When you turn something like this on and you put people at the center, you learn lots about how your organization is set up and how your profiles are set up. So, good piece of work on the Office side. The Salesforce, that's actually the conversation they wanted to have. When I talked to the CIO, you know, her feedback was, okay, great. Salesforce, now get me Workday, get me NetSuite. Let's start to weave all these pieces together. So Office, with a billion users and a new application, is truly sort of the common language. And our goal now is to make sure we have the API set up well, that you guys can work with it, both as a front-end platform and as a source for data. So let me find my clicker again. Let's go on to the third part of the conversation then. And you know, the Windows conversation has moved into something we talk about as more personal computing. The notion of going to a specific device to do a specific thing, not so much. I want to go to any device and get access to the information I want. Of course, some devices might do some things better, but I don't want to have to pick and choose my application based on device, especially with the growth of the processors that are going on. We've been underway now for, I think, a little over 2 months. We did 14 million upgrades the first day. The last public announcement, which I think was October 3rd, was 114. And let's see the clicker there. So didn't stop there. There we go, 114. But that's sort of, honestly, just the beginning. Because 114, right now, we did everything backwards. Normally, when we do an OS release, we let it out to commercial customers first, get them focused on it. Then we wait until all the hardware is done and we do a big launch where the hardware and the software go at the same time to consumers, and you'd usually get that around the Thanksgiving holiday, what do they call it, Black Friday or whatever. That's the normal mode. Here we went out to the consumers first and said, hey, if you've got a machine and you want to upgrade, go. It's free, have at it. The next thing that's just happened is we just finished doing a set of announcements on hardware. And I'll come back to that in a couple minutes, but literally all 10 of the major OEMs, including our team, so the new generation of hardware is just starting to come out, and we haven't really kicked off the commercial side of this yet. We're really gonna kick off the commercial side in November. There's some more work we need to do there. So we're at the beginning of the way for Windows 10. So good piece of work to do and a lot going on. In terms of the platform itself, interesting. You know, if you go back when I started in this job, and before this, by the way, I ran the OEM division for 5 years, so spent a lot of time on the hardware. We used to have different platforms for every different device. In fact, each device type was an ecosystem. So phones had their own platform. The hardware was unique. They had their own stores to sell them in, their own apps. You know, PCs have their own stores. You got to go back a little further for that, but PCs have their own stores, their own ecosystem, and then TVs were a third one. And so if you took a big partner, take Netflix, you know, I'd show up on Monday and say, hey, would you please build an app for the phone? And then you come back on Wednesday and say, hey, I could use one for the PC, and on Friday, hey, how about Xbox? Well, that makes no sense today because the hardware that's in each of the devices is essentially the same. Same processors, same radio stack, same memory, same glass. It's all the same. And so we started the journey actually with Windows 8 getting to Windows 10. With Windows 8, the first thing you actually have to do is the kernel work. Because it turns out the processor's not exactly the same. ARM chipsets in phone devices, x86 chipsets in PCs. So the first work for Windows 8 at the time was around the kernel, the driver model, the browser, DX. So about 30% of the APIs across phone and PC were the same. And we actually put both an operating system for games in Xbox One and basically the Windows 8 operating system for the applications. So if you wanted to build an app that ran across all three, you could. Still a lot of work. If it was Angry Birds, a little easier, but overall, still a lot of work. Then with Windows 8.1, we took the surrounding services for phone and PC and brought those together. So instead of having two different notification services, we went to one. Instead of having two different ways to package up the app, we went to one. Well, with Windows 10, we've continued that journey. Now, instead of having sort of our embedded platform split between the phone platform and the PC platform, there's one embedded platform or one IoT platform, the new term everybody loves. There's the phone, there's the PC, there's the tablet, there's Xbox One. It's all now the same platform. We had to go fix literally hundreds of controls, different calendar control on phone than PC, so we've gone back and cleaned up all the controls. It's not the same app from a UX experience in every device. That doesn't work. But the core of the app is the same, and then you can sort of create the UI you want or use our controls so that it scales appropriately. So Fitbit's got a great app, scales up and down beautifully from an Xbox One to a PC, down to a phone. Netflix is doing the same thing. We've done some work with Twitter. So we're starting to see these applications that are one core app across all of the devices, and then the UX is set to modulate or to be set up appropriately for each device. And the store becomes the same store. And we upgrade the base over time, so we defragment Windows 7, Windows 8, Windows 8.1, Windows Phone 7, Windows Phone 8, Xbox One. You defrag the base, you get to a billion devices all on the same platform, you move your apps there, it's a good conversation. So it takes some work. The other part of the whole conversation is getting the store on a PC to be the place people go. So there's a bunch of pieces to the puzzle, but it's going pretty well. You guys have seen a lot of this. I think you've heard a lot of it. Even the HoloLens uses the same set of APIs, so when you build an app. So what I thought I'd do is I brought along two pieces of hardware. They're early, so we're going to play a little bit, see how they go. But the first one I brought along, let me show a video of it first, and then we'll give it a run up here on the stage. I literally just stole it from my own guys. Now let's play with it. Let's go to the demo machine. So let's see, which one am I? I think I'm one. I'll run it first, and then we'll bring a camera out here, and we'll do a little show and tell. So this is The Witcher 3. Normally, if you have an ultrabook or a super thin and light machine, you don't have a discrete GPU, so you're not playing a game like this at any kind of fidelity. I won't do much. I will resume here. And I haven't played this game a lot, so we'll look around. Now this, see the fidelity here. I fought this guy earlier and he killed me, so I'm not gonna do that again. But you can see the quality of the graphics here. With the discrete GPU in the keyboard, along with extra battery life, this thing just is an incredible machine. So I'm gonna die. That seems like it's a good way to go. I've got that part down, actually. I'm really good at that. So now let's bring the camera out here. So we discovered something interesting. Let me quit when we go to memory. I went to go release the tablet. So you can get a, you can, let's bring, yeah, you can see it up on screen. This is the machine. I'll hold it up in a second. But this button here, when you hold it down, it releases the machine, but it says, hey, you can't. You're playing The Witcher 3. So it knows it needs the GPU to do that. So I actually have to go in here and quit. Before it will allow me to detach. All right, there, buddy. All right, easier. So we will quit the game. And now, since I've done that, it will allow me to detach. That comes out. And this thing, I'll take this off. We can go either way. This thing, I'm going to turn it sideways here in a second. This is a Core i7. It is incredibly thin. This thing, I probably under a pound. Super light, inking, terabyte of memory, 16 gigabits. Gigabytes. This thing is, it's a bit. It has the Retina display scan, which I'll show you in a second for security. And so when you take this thing then and you stick it back in the hinge, you can go either way. So this thing will lock back on. There, it's attached, so I take my hands off. I'm going to disconnect it, so we're not going to see any video out of it anymore. And hold this thing up. I mean, this thing is an incredible laptop. So pretty cool piece of hardware. One of my sort of checkpoints for an operating system is how is the hardware that's coming along. When you see pieces of hardware like this, I go, okay, we're in good shape here. We got 114 million users. This thing's coming for the holiday. And let's go back to slides. It's not just this one. We just spent, again, a couple of weeks with all the OEMs. I actually run the HP Spectre. That's a phenomenal machine, the Dell XPS, the Toshiba. All of the OEMs have new pieces of hardware coming out. So we've got a wave of some of the highest-end hardware I've seen. Intel is starting to do advertising on their own. So the nice part is we go from sort of the OS, get the core going, get the apps going. Now we've got the hardware coming for the holiday. So there's a bunch of good work going on here. I'll take one more run at hardware here. We talked about Continuum at the last one of these conferences I did. If you sit back and you say, okay, the platform is the same between the phone, the PC, the tablet, well then in theory, your applications work across just the same on the phone as they would on a large screen device. Well, it's not easy to operate in that manner. So we built the device. Let's bring the camera guy back out. I've got two of these phones here. I'm gonna start with this one. We'll see if I can get this to work. This one, it has the Retina display scanner in it. So it turns out Retina is more secure than thumbprint. So if I hold this thing up, we'll see if it's, it says make sure it's you. Then it says, hello, Steven. Oh, I think it logged on. Let's do it again. Making sure it's you. Couldn't recognize me. Oh, it doesn't love me. Hey, don't laugh, that's not a good thing. There it goes, hello, Steven. So it logged it on. And so Retina login over time, you'll see that on that Surface device. This is kind of a cool piece of technology and more secure than any of the other biometrics. Now we'll take this another step. This is the Continuum one. This is another one of the devices. No SIM on this thing. I'm gonna plug this in so you can see normal phone. Click my device in here. Same basic principle. Hit okay. And I'm gonna tap to control. So now we need to go back to the monitor. What I can do is I can go back in. You can see the mouse there moving. I'm doing that from the phone here. So, Windows, off to a good start. Users, downloads, applications, hardware, lots of cool things coming. I'm not gonna spend any time on HoloLens, but that's another piece of the hardware puzzle. So we just got lots of good energy in that space. So we talked about Azure as a platform. Scott will hit that tomorrow. We talked about Office. We talked about sort of the Windows franchise and sort of the platform there. I wanna talk a little bit about the evolution of development then. So for us, as a company, and I'd say for a lot of folks in this room and others we've worked with, there was a period in time where, for us, all the devices were Windows devices, Windows phones, Windows PCs, etc. We sort of worked on Windows Server, we had Windows Client, and we used Visual Studio. And both in the client days and the client server days, it was a bit all or nothing. All Microsoft, all Oracle, all IBM, you were an IBM shop, you were an Oracle shop, Apple, but it was a bit all or nothing. Today's world, even for us, doesn't feel anything like that. Look, we're servicing all of the devices out there. Android, iOS, Windows. If you look at our Office franchise, if you look at Skype, if you look at our applications, we have to do that. If you're going to be in the SaaS side, you're going to sell services, you got to support all the platforms. And so we do that. If you look on the cloud side with Azure, you know, and you look across, look, Chef and Puppet and PHP and GitHub and all the folks, we're working with them. Amazon and Azure, they can coexist. You can use Azure AD and use Amazon on the back end. It may not be all or nothing, maybe it is. Linux, 25% of the VMs on Azure today are Linux-based. Windows, Android, lots of tool sets out there. We're contributing now heavily into the OSS community. We used to have a separate group that did that. Now the whole company sort of does that as part of our work. The Docker clients recent, the Azure Cloud Switch, it's just a different generation. And so this notion of all or nothing for any of us is gone. And so the trick here is to figure out how to best participate, work well together, and then part of it is the tool set. For a long time, Visual Studio was this awesome IDE tool set for working on that Windows platform in that all or nothing world. We've been working pretty hard to adapt. We had a set, and we still have a set of Visual Studio integrated partners so that you can plug other tools into the IDE. Xamarin's a good example. There's lots of others out there. But in today's world, we need other tools. So we've been working hard. Last year, we announced something called Visual Studio Code. So that's an editor that you can use from a Mac, from a Linux machine. You know, today when we work with developers, the last thing I want to do is spend time loading parallels on a Mac and then getting the IDE loaded. We just want to hop into the editor. You'll see more next week at a conference called Connect. But I was going to ask my team to come on up. I go to the demo slide. Ask Robert to come up and show you an app that we actually use on campus and a little bit about how you use Visual Studio in today's world as a tool set to work in that environment, that sort of no longer all or none environment. So let's go to the demo machines. And I think you're on the same one he was.
Which one is this? Four?
Try four. There you go. You're alive. I see you.
Okay. Good. While these guys wake up.
Wake up the other machine.
Well, it's giving me a nice welcome.
That's usually the I typed the wrong password.
That's usually the sign that I typed my password wrong.
Yep, I know that sign.
Okay, so.
Are you nervous?
Not at all.
Is that why you typed your password wrong?
Cool. So, hi everybody. What I want to do is I want to talk about how Visual Studio and Visual Studio Code and Visual Studio Online give you the tools you need to build a variety of applications and to build any of the applications that we've been talking about here today. So we're going to investigate a scenario, and the scenario is that our company has decided that we want to get shuttles going to take people from building to building. So what do we need to be able to do this? Well, of course, we need buses, but then we need apps. We need apps for the employees to request a shuttle. We need apps for the drivers to record that they've given somebody a ride and then log that and bill back to their cost center, et cetera. And then, of course, we need some services that are running for these apps to talk to. So the IT department built the services, the back-end services, a bunch of web APIs up in the cloud. They, in our example, they used Azure. They could have used Amazon. It doesn't really matter. And now what we want is for the apps to be built. So IT's busy building the back-end, so we decide we're going to have a hackathon. So we're going to invite developers from the company to come and build these applications. We do this at Microsoft for a week every summer. So we do the same thing here. So you get to the hackathon, and the first question is, what skills do you have? Because that's going to determine what group you join. So some people will show up with XAML and C-sharp skills. So the XAML and C-sharp guys get together, and they build a bunch of the front-end applications. One of the ones they built is the Windows 10 app for the employees to request rides. So when I start this application, I see rides I've taken. I see automobiles that are available and how far away they are. I click on that. It shows me where the car is. And then I can then request that vehicle, or I can call the driver. Okay, so we've got Windows 10 applications. But because we know C-sharp and XAML, we can build a bunch of other applications. Oh, that was supposed to be Control 1 for Zoom It. So here's the Windows 10 application, but we can also build desktop applications, and maybe we build a WPF application for the administrators. maybe the company is not on Windows 10 yet. We're all still on Windows 8, so we can build Windows 8 applications. So we've got a universal application here using that Windows 8 model for Windows 8 and the phone. And then we've also got, because we're using the Xamarin tools, we've got Android versions and iOS versions of this, all using a common set of APIs, because those are C# code in a portable class library. So here's the I'm going to launch the Android application. I'm using the Visual Studio emulator for Android, which ships with Visual Studio. You can also download this separately and run it without Visual Studio. I can choose from a number of devices. And here is the application for customers. It's the exact same application talking to the exact same services. So I can pick a car, and I can request it. And now I've made a request for that vehicle. We've also got an iOS version of this, which I can't run on this machine, because in order to run an iOS app, you need to build it on a Mac. I've got a Mac next to me. What I could do is come into Tools, go into Options, scroll down to the Xamarin section, and basically pair Visual Studio with a Mac on the network, or you could use cloud services. There's Mac and cloud that you can use. And when you run the application, Visual Studio picks up the application, sends it over to the Mac, which builds it, and then runs it in the iOS simulator. Okay, so we've got, with our C# and XAML skills, with our existing skills, we can build this broad array of cross-platform mobile apps. Now another group shows up, and they have HTML, CSS, and JavaScript, and TypeScript skills. Well, they can also use Visual Studio, because what they're going to use is the Visual Studio tools for Apache Cordova. Okay, so this application is going to be used for the drivers. This is the app the drivers will use. It's going to be cross-platform, run on iOS, run on Windows, run on Android, and use existing skills, TypeScript, use HTML, JavaScript. So with the Apache Cordova tools, we've got great support for the modern web technologies. We've got Gulp, Bower, NPM all integrated in there. I can launch my config file, and I can set up the platforms I want, the platform of Cordova I want. I can choose plugins, so I have some plugins that are built into the machine, like device, notification. I can go get custom plugins, either local or off Git, and that's what I did here. So I've got vibration, I've got device, and I went to Git and I downloaded the application Insights plugin, so I add App Insights into this application. Okay. This application is also running on the simulator, and it is the application for drivers. Now, if I was doing this on an actual device, I could take advantage of push notifications, which are sitting in Azure. So when I request a ride from one device, it would show up on the Android device. But since I'm running the emulator, I don't have any notifications, so that ride I requested doesn't show up here. Then I'm going to start the service, start the ride, finished the ride, took all of 2 seconds, we went a tenth of a mile, and it's going to cost 30 cents. Okay? Now this application will run on Windows, it'll run on iOS. In order to get it to run on iOS, again, I go into Tools, I go into Options, I go up to the Tools for Apache Cordova side, the remote agent configuration, and as long as I have the remote agent running on the Mac, then when I build this application and run it, Visual Studio again picks up the code, sends it over to the Mac, which builds the Cordova application and launches it in the simulator. So with existing skills, C# and XAML, HTML, JavaScript, CSS, and Visual Studio, we can build these cross-platform applications. Now, another group of people show up at the hackathon, and they've got JavaScript and CSS skills. They don't run Visual Studio. They don't have Windows. They've got Macs. Of course, we could tell them, oh, go get Parallels, get Visual Studio, but they say, no, we don't run Visual Studio. We're of the group that like lightweight text editors, rich text editors. So if we could switch over to the Mac machine, there we go. What are these guys going to use? Well, they're going to use Visual Studio Code. Visual Studio Code is free. Takes about a minute to download, takes about a minute to install. It runs on Windows, it runs on Mac, it runs on Linux. And the idea of Visual Studio Code was to give you a rich text editor that has a lot of the editing goodness that we know from Visual Studio. So here's the exact same Cordova project taken from the same Git repo, opened up in Visual Studio Code, and I've already deployed it to the iOS simulator. So here's what the application looks like running over here. I start it, start a ride, finish it, and then I can go get the customer signature. Now what I can also do in this point, what I want to do is make a change to this. So I'm going to come here, I want to see what happens if the ride takes more than a second. So I'm just going to hard code this in here, get great IntelliSense, so add. The idea here is to make the experience much like developing in Visual Studio in a more lightweight editor. So I'm going to add 10 minutes to this. And if I typed it right, it's going to work. I save this. Now I'm going to come to the terminal, and all I need to do is compile my TypeScript. I could make this a gulp task so it happens automatically. And then from the command line, I can say Cordova run iOS, Cordova add iOS would create a new Cordova application, Cordova build would build it, but Cordova run iOS will build the application, run it, and then send it over to the iPhone simulator. And now, when I start this and stop it, now we can see what happens if this was a 10-minute ride. We went a tenth of a distance in 10 minutes, and that also cost 30 cents. So what we've seen is, with our existing skills in the Visual Studio family, Visual Studio 2015 here, Visual Studio Code here, and in addition, Visual Studio Online, these applications are managed there. You can actually get this source code. It's the My Shuttle app. You can just do a search for myshuttle.biz. All of the source code's available, along with some blog posts that talk about it. We've got great support for the IDE, great support for Visual Studio Code, Visual Studio Online to manage the project, manage your work items, do continuous integration. We've got an excellent end-to-end story for building today's applications with the Visual Studio family of tools.
Excellent, sir. Thank you. Big hand for Robert. Head back to slides. And I think that brings us sort of the end for the evening. We said we'd get in and out in an hour and sort of try and give you a top level. If you look across the platforms, if you look across the tools, if you look across the industry, we're all dealing with very rapid change. But the truth of the matter is the change we're working with and the evolution of the business is transforming every industry out there. And every place we work, whether it's medical, whether it's sports, whether it's media, I spent some time with the media industry, everybody's under change, everybody's under transformation and disruption. We're working hard to provide you the tools, the information to be a great partner for you. And honestly, there's a ton of opportunity out there. So we hope you take the most advantage of this week. We'll do everything we can to sort of be as open, as transparent, as responsive as we can be. We've got a great set of speakers and MVPs, but it goes well beyond the conference this week. So anything we can do to help, we look forward to doing a great job. For those of you visiting from Channel 9, thanks for joining us, and enjoy the rest of your conference and the rest of your Monday night. Thank you so much.